The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse.
The beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
I was just flashing back to our conversation on pro wrestling yesterday. Oh, and he's got the power from parts unknown in a triple reverse pole Nelson.
Speaking of parts unknown.
Welcome.
Come on,
I'm
Sam.
Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Sam, say hello.
Okay. Welcome. Today.
You know, Debbie and Sam and I were howling earlier today. That's what we
trio,
do. When you're,
huh?
Yep.
Well,
when you're at work, we're here howling.
Today is November the 30th, the final day of November of 2010.
It's the final day of National Novel Writing Month, and if you're not done by now, well, you just may not make it.
No, once again, I've let the year slip by, National Novel Writing Month, without making the goal. In fact, this year, I just decided to skip right to the end and avoid all the guilt.
Go right for the Krispy Kremes.
Yeah, I was. It's been a busy month. And there's been a lot of things going on in the world out there, and that's why we've been busy trying to keep an eye on the Watchers. Who watches the Watchers? Hmm? Well,
Sam, where's your cheese stick? Sam's over here trying to get my attention.
He's not buying it. Well, you've been keeping an eye on things today.
I spend most of my day looking at stuff. Videos, reading things, all about Billy Meier.
And Billy Meier's the self-proclaimed contactee, abductee, and prophet.
Well, I'm not sure I'd call him an abductee because he went willingly.
Oh, okay. Contactee.
Passenger.
Yeah. Contactee and prophet from Switzerland. He's in his 70s now, and he's, of course, the fellow that his U.S. representative claims is in talks with former astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell for a public forum.
And won't that be interesting? You know, we need to get him down in Branson for the the big meeting next summer.
Next July.
We're all going to be there. We should get them to come, too. Wouldn't that be fun? Yesterday, I watched – what is Sam doing? Yesterday, I watched a video from 1978 that was done by a former military man. I think I mentioned it yesterday. And it was called Contact. It's essentially looking at all of the information and the photos and trying to debunk them by having experts take a look at the photographs, the metallurgy, you know, you name it. In that show, Contact, it was mentioned that Meier had been seeing and meeting with these entities since 1975. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily true because he first contacted them in the 40s, or first was contacted by them in the 40s.
That
he was 5 years old.
Okay, that was a very active decade for UFO contact.
It really was. He was 5 years old, and he was told – now, actually, it may have been earlier than that. I've read a lot of stuff. But in the 40s – yeah, you're looking it up. He was told that he had been bred by these aliens. He and two others had been bred to have the ability, essentially, the neurobiology. It goes to the peepers and into the neurobiology. And you really have to work to maintain your upbeatness.
So Meier was born in February of 1937. So
it was in the 40s.
Okay.
He was 5 years old, and he was told he had been bred for this purpose. He initially heard this entity Svath.
Okay.
Who told him how he'd been bred, told him that these entities were working with him, and they wanted to teach him. And one of the many things that he did, as he, as I said, rode as a passenger in one of the he saw this first pear-shaped craft land in front of him when he was a little boy. I think he was 7 at that point. And he was taken on board the craft. And mind you, when he first started hearing these voices in his head, he was rather upset.
As you would expect.
As a 5-year-old, yes, indeedy. And he went not to his father or mother. He went to a priest.
Okay.
Priest's name was Zimmerman. Mm-hmm. And Father Zimmerman told young Edward, which is his real name, because Billy is a nickname, because he likes Westerns.
Okay.
Young Edward, that he should listen to these voices, that it was telepathy. There were entities that wanted to teach him.
You know,
nice priest.
This is interesting because in that sense, there's a bit of a parallel with the story of Muhammad, the prophet, who started hearing from what he believed, mm-hmm. or what an entity told him was the angel Gabriel, and he was very upset by it. But it was his wife who said that he should listen.
And similar to Samuel.
In that sense, yeah, when he went into the temple and was hearing a voice and thought that it was
And he kept going to Eli. Exactly.
Right. Sure, okay.
And Eli told him, next time, do what it tells you to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is what the priest essentially advised the young Edward, told him to listen to the voices. And he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he began seeing these craft land, and he went aboard them. This is in the early 40s, and he had television screens, essentially, that viewing screens that he saw the future, mm-hmm. and what was going on. And he was told that essentially a Sodom and Gomorrah event was going to happen very quickly on the Earth. And right after that, there was the atom bomb.
Okay, yeah.
In Hiroshima. And that had to be terrifying for a 7-year-old to feel like he had the burden of that knowledge. So in one of his early trips, he was implanted. He was given this implant. And while it was in his head, because they removed it later, while it was in his head, he essentially was upgraded.
Okay.
Upgraded.
Yeah, like the Cybermen from Doctor Who.
Exactly.
Yeah, human 2.0.
He suddenly was able to understand. He went from a 7-year-old understanding to that of a 35-year-old, is how it's described.
Okay.
Within a matter of minutes. He increased his compassion. He suddenly wanted to go out and heal everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He was really having a kumbaya moment,
mm-hmm.
and understood physics and all kinds of things that a 7-year-old shouldn't have understood.
Now, bear in mind that Sharon is simply reporting what.
Yeah, I'm
claims,
not saying I believe it.
Right. These are just the claims made by Billy Meyer and his American contact, Michael Horn.
And what is amazing, no relation to Tom Horn, when you read these and watch the, not read, but when you watch him interviewed, he is believable.
Hmm.
You watch his eyes and he does not appear to be intentionally deceiving anybody.
Well, I had a similar experience with the gentleman whose name escapes me at the moment. The archived interview is still up and available if you dig hard enough for it at the station that we worked for out in mid-Missouri. The fellow from Jefferson City who believed at the site of the abandoned...
I know what you're talking about.
The abandoned jail, mm-hmm. in Jefferson City was...
And he mailed
us
information.
Right, right. And, we had some contact with him after that, but I had him on the program at the Eagle 93.9 out there, and he was believable in studio. My take on it was that he genuinely believed what he was saying. You know, the fact that what he perceives to be true may not in fact be perceivable to the rest of us or may not in fact be occurring.
Well, he is not being deceptive, but I believe he is being deceived.
That's the better way to put it, yes. So, and so Billy Meyer comes across the same way.
He does. He really does. He seems like the nicest. He's like Grandpa from Heidi.
Now he is, yeah. He's in his 70s.
He is. I mean, he really does come across like Grandpa from mm-hmm. Heidi. Even in 1978, he had a very gentle persona. And he has only one arm because he lost his left arm. So imagine he's out on his moped out in these high Alp mountains, and he has a gun, a camera, and a jacket on his moped. That's what people describe as seeing. He's not carrying all sorts of paraphernalia with him. And he goes out and he gets these amazing photographs with one arm.
Well, there are some questions. And, of course, the really curious thing is that these entities that have contacted him have names that sound very familiar to anyone who's familiar with the deities of the ancient Near East, the cosmology of the ancient Near East, and actually the ancient Americas, because he says that he's heard from Ptah. I don't know if that's correct pronunciation, but that's one of the ancient Greek gods, isn't it? P-T-A-H, Ptah?
I think it's Egyptian.
Egyptian, not Greek. I'm sorry. That's what I meant to say. Also, Semjaza, of course, we mentioned yesterday, which is the leader.
Well, he pronounces it Semjaza.
Semjaza, which he says is the granddaughter of Ptah, who was his first contact.
Well, I think Svath.
Svath.
His first.
That's right. That's right. Semjaza was supposed to be the granddaughter of Svath, who was he described as an extraterrestrial human male. Quetzal, of course, like Quetzalcoatl. And. You know, with the others like Emmanuel and...
Emmanuel, Yahweh.
Yahweh, okay.
In fact, he was told that Yahweh is their language for King of Wisdom. And it's a title. And in fact, it's very often the Yahwehs who establish new civilizations on planets.
Oh, so, okay, Yahweh is like...
Think... Commander Adama.
Right. It's very, very Mormon. That's very Mormon.
Yeah. In fact,
dress
he was
warmly,
told that it was a Yahweh who set up this planet 13,500 years ago.
And to all of you enlightened adepts, if you dress warmly and eat your vegetables, someday you too can grow up to be God of your own planet. It's, you know, that's probably how these kids teach their kids.
Well, that's what we're being taught. And what he is told is that many of these entities are simply, they're just evolved a little bit further than he is. And he's a little bit further than we are. And we'll all get there kumbaya.
Well, this is really interesting. And again, interesting that Edgar Mitchell is being brought into this. Now, we've not actually seen a response from Edgar Mitchell yet. This press release was put out by Michael Horn.
Yes, it was.
Who is Billy Meyer's American
publicist. He claims he's heard from Mitchell.
Okay. Well, Dr. Mitchell, as we mentioned yesterday, is one of the co-founders of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which, incidentally, slight left turn here. You remember the big flap last year with... one of the czars that President Obama appointed, Van Jones, with his radical green agenda?
Yes.
Van Jones is one of the scholars in residence or whatever, a fellow of the Institute of Noetic Sciences.
Oh, that's so interesting because didn't he also sign on to the...
yes, that's what actually...
claiming that he did not believe the 9/11 story.
The official 9/11 story, which, of course, that's what Glenn Beck went after him for, not the fact that this guy believes that... you know, there's a scientific method to contact the spirit realm, but then as a Mormon, you might not expect him to. And I refer back to the discussion with Carl Tykrib a couple of Fridays ago about the Mormon Transhumanist Association and the presentation there.
And that gets back to the idea of an implant in your head to upgrade you.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is interesting, and the fact that these contacts began in 1942 is significant because 1947 is considered to be sort of the watershed year for the modern UFO era. That's when Captain Kenneth Arnold, saw the UFOs over Washington. The case investigated, by the way, by Guy Bannister of the FBI.
Oh, I know. I love that.
Yeah, who later wound up in New Orleans there with working with Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yes, he did.
But... of course, the Roswell UFO crash, 1947. So 1947 is supposed to be the big year. And that, transitioning to our next topic here, is one of the main points or main starting points for the belief system of the so-called Collins elite, according to Nick Redfern, who I interviewed a couple of weeks back. He's also been interviewed by Dr. Future at Futurequake, another great interview.
Dr. Michael Heiser has weighed in on this.
Yes, he has. And I'm trying to see if I can get Mike Heiser onto A View from the Bunker to discuss his analysis and review of final events. Of course, Mike, along with Joe Jordan and Guy Malone, were interviewed by Redfern for the book. And to his credit, Nick Redfern did an excellent job of presenting their views, perspectives from Bible-believing Christians who are deferring to the biblical text for guidance in interpreting the UFO phenomenon. The Collins elite, which, according to the sources that talk to Redfern, supposedly are Christians who have come to the conclusion that because the UFO phenomenon really kicked into high gear in 1947 after the Babylon Working by Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard out in the desert, that
they fight fire with fire.
They fight fire with fire. Essentially, the only way to respond to the threat to the souls of good red-blooded Americans is to impose a theocracy, to impose a pharisaical veneer of righteousness by
making
everyone...
it's going to feel like fascism, but, you know, just relax and let the hooks do their work.
That's exactly right. Well, that was our reaction to the book, that Redfern reported what he was told. He was upfront and honest in saying, you know, I don't know how far I can trust these guys. They seem to be genuine. They seem to be sincere. But I have no way to document that these guys were actually at the meetings they claimed to have been. The documents that they gave him support portions of the stories that they told, but not any of the real meat. You can't cross-reference. And a point that Paul and Philip Collins made in some private conversations we had about the whole Collins elite thing, and no relation there, by the way, is that there's no open source intelligence anywhere else that makes any reference whatsoever to the Collins elite.
You know, we have run across cutouts before.
Sure.
Remember NICAP?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if my understanding is correct, NICAP turned out to be really just a cutout.
And Paul and Philip Collins have done an excellent job. In fact, we did an interview with them on the View from the Bunker a couple of months ago about the government's involvement, or at least the involvement of intelligence services in propagating UFO religions.
Well, it's like good cop, bad cop.
Mm-hmm.
The men in black show up. They're the bad cops. And then NICAP would show up. They were the good cops.
Right.
And the poor, you know, schlep who's been, you know, taken aboard a UFO and had to go through the rapiscan on the UFO and then refused. And so, well, anyway,
yeah.
They didn't talk to the men in black. They were terrified by them, but NICAP, mm-hmm. they would tell everything.
And according to Redfern and his sources quoted in Final Events, NICAP was part of the process of propagating the meme that what we're dealing with are extraterrestrials, whereas the Collins elite, according to Redfern's sources, believed that they found the truth, which is that these aliens are after our souls, and that they really came into our sphere, our dimension after 47 with Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard, and before them with Aleister Crowley, mm-hmm. and some of the work that he did. And Mike Heiser goes into a very detailed analysis of this, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes at PIDradio.com. His analysis is very much worth reading because he can address the theological issues, and he gets into what he calls cartoonish demonology of the Collins elite, and just really is dismayed that these guys who supposedly represent America's top men on this particular issue are so theologically ignorant. They don't know anything you would think that they could have called somebody.
But then wouldn't they be? I mean, wouldn't their understanding be totally wrong?
Well,
and lack depth and.
So supposedly, these are the guys who are drawn from all aspects, from all points of the American military industrial complex, intelligence services, mm-hmm. Military and so forth, to draw together a panel of the brightest minds who were able to figure out what exactly was going on here, because there was a real fear, especially back in the 50s. Was it 54 when they had that flap over Washington, D.C.?
I think so.
Yeah.
And,
you know, if these UFOs can buzz the White House with impunity, you know, we better figure out pretty quickly what's going on here. Mm-hmm. So if these guys are truly the best that America had to offer, and they couldn't really dig into the theology of demonology and refer back to the original Hebrew and Greek texts, you know, then something is really wrong here. And that leads to his conclusion, which is kind of was our gut instinct about the book, which is that the real takeaway from Final Events is not that UFOs are piloted by fallen angels who want to, you know, suck our souls. The real takeaway here is that somebody wants the UFO community to believe that Christians and Jews are essentially fascists bent on world domination.
Mm-hmm.
That our response to this threat is to put down, you know, clamp down the thumb screws on anyone who won't toe the biblical line.
It reminds me of the Protocols of Zion.
Yes.
Which I honestly think they are true goals. It's just wrapped in a Zionist package, mm-hmm, to make it appear that it is the Jewish people who are really out to suck your blood.
Exactly. Exactly. So I would love to get Mike on, because Mike can explain it and articulate it much more clearly than I just did, but and with the authority of a scholar instead of just a jack of all trades like me. But you do want to read.
Jack. You're cute.
Don't say that word too loudly.
Oh,
TSA will come busting in here with one of those portable scanners.
Again?
But you do want to read this review and analysis of Final Events, because Mike is on the same page. It's just he's got better reasons for being there than just saying something doesn't seem right about this.
He's got letters after his name.
That's right. So
that makes him
that's why the story was important to get out there about Final Events. If the Collins Elite is real, they're stupid. It's more likely that this is a story that's being planted out there, as David Duncan warned us about several, mm-hmm, years ago, that somebody is trying to set up Christians to take a fall for everything that's wrong in the world.
We get to shake his hand one day and say, you
Amen.
Were right.
Dave, you warned us, and brother, you were way ahead of the curve on this one. So anyway, meanwhile, we got the Koreas.
Meanwhile, back at the ranch. You know, something else that you and I have been watching, I've watched it all the way through once, and you were watching it with me a couple of nights ago, is a movie called 2012 Science or Superstition. Is it Superstition?
Something like that.
It's a really interesting movie. One guy was saying that he's been talking with the shamans, and they were sort of testing the pulse of the earth, and mother is really, really cheesed, and she's,
right,
you know,
right,
ready to throw us up and throw us off. But he talked about a harvest of souls.
Yes.
That phrase really, every time I see it, it just really strikes me that he talks about the need to reduce the population and referred to it as a harvest of souls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It is creepy when you think about that, and that's something that was. It was with the prophecies of the Incas. Was that the Incas that he
the Maya?
The Maya.
I think he was hanging out with supposed
descendants,
you know,
of the Mayans.
Descendants. Yeah, exactly. Mm. That reminds me of the fact that, speaking of the green agenda, and that there are too many people on the Earth, Cancun, mm-hmm, is the site where all these guys have flown in.
Yeah.
And they're meeting to tell us that we can't drive our SUVs.
Yeah. No, their arms are tired, so. Yeah, there was a story recently about Al Gore, who had gone to, I don't know, Copenhagen or someplace for some award, and he went in, and while he gave his acceptance speech and was inside this banquet for about an hour, he left his rental car outside, keys in the ignition, engine turned on.
No.
Well, you know, it's cold up there. You don't want that car to get cold.
No.
Yeah, I don't have a source for that. I heard that somewhere. The source, I believe, is trustworthy. I should check that out and put that at the instapaper.com site just to make sure that it's not telling tales out of school. But, yeah, the Climate Change Summit, it's more than just saying we shouldn't drive our SUVs. It's the scientists are actually calling for rationing of resources in the developed,
mm-hmm,
world.
Well, one of the things that I read, a quote by one of the guys who's down there, and I'm sorry, I don't have his name in front of me. He was saying that we don't have to depend upon any kind of of union of the world leaders. They don't have to sign on to a global treaty saying, yes, we're going to do this, we're all agreed to it, because each country has indeed begun telling its citizens what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we're okay. We're on track.
Well,
now let's, you know, let me get my Learjet, you know, gassed up and
because, you know, I'm so important, I need the right to fly around.
That's what it comes down to. That is what it comes down to.
Right. We're just, you know, little worker bees. And if we dare to question the science, the response is essentially,
can you say that again?
Science is essentially to shut up, slave. So, these guys are down there. They're actually talking about implementing World War II style rationing. You get little coupon books and you can have so much gasoline per week, and you know, don't forget, save your lard, because we need that for the war effort.
Did you see the story about the young man up in Wisconsin who was shooting up, well, holding his fellow students hostage?
I did not.
Toward the end of the day, if I understand the correct events that took place, I watched it this morning on the news. Toward the end of the class period, he said he had to go to the bathroom and left to get his backpack, which had a gun in it. Hmm. And he showed up in the classroom and said he was going to kill everybody. And he didn't kill anyone except himself.
Hmm.
He did, you know, shoot some holes in the wall.
It sounds like somebody whose programming didn't take.
Well, that's kind of the take that I had on it. Apparently, one of his fellow students began talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, they were trying to joke with him, trying to get him out of the sort of one-minded, dark thought that he had to kill, and to remind him that he was, you know, one of them.
Hmm. It's a tragedy, but these things pop up every now and then, and and, of course, the takeaway in the media will be, okay, guns bad, scanners good.
Mm-hmm. In fact, we need to put rap-a-scan in every school.
Right, which is coming.
I call it rape-a-scan.
Yeah, or gate rape. That's the, of course, the option. Yeah, if you don't take the scan, you get the blue glove and the panties. Interestingly,
the blue glove that they don't change between.
Yes, yeah. Which is crazy because they're supposed to test the gloves for explosive residue.
Exactly. So,
well, so you got that going on. And Dr. Jerome Corsi has an article at WorldNet Daily today that the nude scans, and we mentioned this before, a German television station did a study on these scanners, these backscatter X-ray machines at the beginning of the year. But Dr. Corsi reports today that there's a new peer-reviewed scientific study on backscatter full-body imaging, which says that, and I quote now from the report, an evaluation of airport X-ray backscatter units based on image characteristics demonstrated that packages of explosives contoured to the body or worn along the sides likely would not be detected by X-ray units. So as long as you put it on the sides up against your rib cage, or again, which is something that the professor from Arizona State University, Peter Rez, said, you can mold the C4 to make it look like a roll of body fat.
Arnold Schwarzenegger made it onto Mars looking like a big woman.
That's it. We are headed to be, we're becoming a total recall society.
The
last laugh.
I am not shoving that thing up my nose. They're not making me do that.
No, that's
no.
Yeah, one probe too many. Well, this weekend, this Friday night,
you're going to be talking to somebody in a few minutes.
Dr. Gary Bates, who is a somebody who's worked with Mike Heiser, Guy Malone on the Roswell Bible UFO conferences in the past. We're going to talk about creation on Friday night. The interview will be done tonight. We'll play it back Friday night on A View from the Bunker at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, blogtalkradio.com/PID radio. There was a bit of a discussion after the last program about creation and why creation is important, why the early chapters of the book of Genesis are important to Christians. A lot of us would, and you know this from when we met, I was willing to jettison everything prior to Genesis chapter 12, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah.
And that's all just fairy tales and fables and fantasies, because the people who lived back then couldn't, you know, whatever.
I loved you anyway.
Well, and I'm glad you did, because thankfully the Holy Spirit opened my eyes. You need to understand why the early chapters of the Bible are important, and Dr. Gary Bates will help us with that. That'll be coming up Friday night. Still trying to line up another guest for the other hour. Otherwise, it'll be me blathering for an hour. But either way, we will have a two-hour program. Just what's the percentage of blather for the show?
It depends.
Yes. But we will be back tomorrow, God willing. And until
then, thank heaven for the music.
I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here.